This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. The National Center for Reason and Justice is reporting that Frances Keller could soon be released from prison here in Texas. Keller has spent the last 20 years behind bars for a crime that many say never actually happened. This is one of Texas's most high-profile cases of satanic ritual sexual abuse. In 1991, Fran Keller and her husband Dan were accused of sexually abusing a 3-year-old girl who was attending their daycare center in Oak Hill, a community in southwest Austin. After a 6-day trial in 1993, the Kellers were convicted and given sentences of 48 years each. But immediately there were questions and calls of injustice, as there were many questions about the case. And today people are wondering what actually happened. With us this half hour to discuss the Keller case is Debbie Nathan of the National Center for Reason and Justice. She's also the author of the book, Satan's Silence, Ritual Abuse and the Making of a Modern American Witch Hunt. And welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you.
So, Debbie, tell me about the Keller case. How big of a deal was this case? Was this one of those media things? Was this a media witch hunt?
It wasn't just a media witch hunt. It was a witch hunt from a lot of different agencies, but it also was just part and parcel of an entire panic that started in the 80s and lasted until the 1990s. It was one of dozens of cases all over the country. DAs got involved with the idea that Satanists were conspiring all over the country to molest children in daycare centers. Social workers got involved with that, child protection workers, psychotherapists, police. It wasn't just the media. The media certainly fanned the flames, but it was a culture-wide panic all over the United States. There was nothing special about this case, as bad as that seems.
Yeah, here in San Antonio, also recently we had the San Antonio Four, four young women who were also accused of ritualized sexual child abuse, and they went to prison and under junk science and recanted testimony, and it took over a decade to get them out, and that we're still.
There was also a case. The first case that I'm aware of happened in El Paso. In 1985-86, and there were two daycare teachers, women approaching middle age, who both served 5 years before their convictions were overturned. Again, there was junk expert testimony based on junk social science. There was junk medical science. So there's also another case called the Mineola Swingers case, which has a strong whiff of this sort of ritual accusation, and some of those people, I believe, are still locked up. That occurred in Mineola, Texas, not too long ago. In case anybody thinks that Texas is notoriously bad with four cases, there are other states that have had just as many.
The phone number is 614-8980, 614-8980. If you're listening, you want to jump in on this conversation, if you have something to share about this, we welcome your input. The number is 614-8980. Also, you can email thesource@tpr.org with your questions and comments. So, I mean, this is an era. I remember this is a time when we had, like, also recovered memories. People were remembering, oh, yes, when I was 3 months old, this happened to me, and it was some sort of that. Does that kind of fall into this this era of junk science?
It does, and those two phenomena, adults, mainly women, going into therapy and recovering what they thought were true memories of having been abused, is actually very connected to the children's cases, because many of those patients were diagnosed with multiple personality disorder, and as their alters, as they called them, their alter personalities would be called out by the therapist. They would just recount these terrible, terrible stories of bizarre satanic abuse, and they said that this had happened to them when they were little, and the therapist in the late 70s started wondering, well, where are the kids today if there is this generations-long satanic conspiracy to molest kids, and these women are remembering it. Where are the children today? And in fact, many of the therapists who were treating the women actually started treating the children. And my theory is that actually the satanic cases came from that kind of therapy. And in the Keller case, some of the children were actually diagnosed by psychiatrists and psychologists as having multiple personalities. It's sort of a very, very controversial diagnosis now. But back then they were diagnosed with multiple personalities, and their alters would come out with more memories of extreme abuse. So and that didn't happen in every case, but in the Keller case, those two things came together.
Yeah, let's walk through the Keller case, unpack that. How did it come about? We knew that Fran and Dan had a little daycare center that they were operating out of their home in Austin. And what happened?
So they had a little daycare center, and there was one mother who apparently had some serious issues in her life with a history of incest, a history of her father having abused her, and it was a great concern to her. She thought about it all the time. She was in therapy, and apparently, you know, it's quite likely that she communicated this concern to her little girl. She had a bad marriage and was going through a divorce, and the little girl was doing a lot of acting out one summer. Was biting and screaming and kicking and trying to stab the dog with a barbecue fork and acting herself like a dog. And one day she told her mother that Kellers, it was a couple, Frances Keller and her husband Dan, that they had molested her. And the mother got, of course, extremely upset, but then started reading and, you know, going to therapists and reading material from organizations that thought that there was a satanic conspiracy throughout the country to molest kids and turn them into satanic robots. Eventually, a lot of parents started talking to each other, and a total of three children accused the Kellers. And as time went by, the accusations got stranger and stranger to the point where they involved allegations such as Danny burning children or burying children, electroshocking their genitals, brushing their teeth with his feces. They were said to have sacrificed newborn babies with the cooperation of the little children from the daycare, burying babies in cemeteries, drugging the kids, prostituting these preschoolers, putting them on jets to Mexico. Again, very typical accusations all over the country in these kinds of cases during the 80s and 90s.
You would think that some of that activity would leave physical evidence. But in the trial, we had none of that.
Well, actually, and I want to talk again, I want to keep, you know, pressing the fact that this happened all over the country. There was always talk in these cases of pornography, the making of child pornography, and it was never found. There was always talk about horrible violence, including, you know, cutting kids with and shooting them and killing babies, and that stuff was never found. The only thing that was found in these cases was on the bodies of some of the children. Doctors would say that they looked at their genitalia and they saw little marks
right. That
were abnormal.
We have to take a break. Debbie Nathan, we're going to continue this conversation talking about the developments in this notorious Keller case. And there's some activity in this today that's coming out. We're going to continue this conversation on The Source. And we'll be right back after this message. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Some developments in an infamous chapter in Texas judicial history. Oak Hill daycare operator Frances Keller was convicted of sexual assault, a ritualized satanic sexual assault of children. She spent the last 20 years behind bars, but that some are saying that this was a wrongful conviction. The crime never actually happened. I'm joined by Debbie Nathan of the National Center for Reason and Justice. And so, Debbie, you were talking about the astonishing lack of physical evidence after all these allegations, these wild, fantastic stories, flying kids to Mexico, prostituting them, burning them and things. But what did they find? If they didn't find evidence of that, but they found evidence of other things.
Yeah, they would find evidence in these cases of little marks or little features that they felt were abnormal on children's genitals. And they said that these features, little lines and bumps, that these were evidence that the kids had been assaulted. And, you know, juries, that was very powerful evidence. And that did look like real solid evidence. Now, even in the San Antonio 4 case, as well as in the Keller case, the big issue that's leading to legal action in these cases, to relief for all the defendants, is the fact that that kind of evidence that used to be considered evidence of trauma has now been shown through scientific research to be found on non-abused kids. In other words, it's perfectly normal to have little lines and bumps on the genitalia of small children.
But if you're looking for any scrap of evidence that's going to support this story, you're going to find something.
If you're
a prosecutor or you're an investigator and you're really convinced something happened and you're looking for evidence, if there's a little scrape mark from a kid who fell down and hurt his knee, suddenly that becomes something more than that.
No, I don't think that's really the issue. I mean, the prosecutors and everyone involved with this, they weren't looking for little scrapes on the knee. They were well-meaning people. They thought that they were doing right. They thought they had new scientific evidence, you know, in the form of, like, what genitals were supposed to look like and how kids were supposed to act if they'd been abused. And they were well-meaning, and they weren't stupid. But the problem was that this country was in a panic. Everybody, every major institution in this country that had to do with the phenomena, with the issue of child abuse, including the media, totally believed that the most incredible, bizarre, and improbable, and logistically impossible things could happen. And my organization, that's why we exist. We want people to understand how easy it is when it comes to the issue of harm to children, how easy it is at certain times in history for the country to go crazy, for the country to panic. I mean, child abuse is a really serious problem. I'm a mother myself. I'm certainly concerned about it. But, when people panic about it and common sense and science go out the window, it can be very, very scary. And well-meaning people can panic, and that's what we saw. And the Kellers are part of that panic. And we need to understand what happened. We need to learn the lessons of these cases. We need to sit down and say, gee, are we still in a panic about something else? One of the features of a social panic is when you're in the middle of it, you don't know. The crazy stuff seems perfectly reasonable.
So, I mean, but Fran Keller, now we're hearing that there may be some developments, and we don't know when this is going to happen. It might happen as soon as today, but may not. But there could be released from prison on appeal.
The Kellers have a very brilliant lawyer, Keith Hampton, in Austin, and I'll tell you that what's happening right now with that case is very similar to what happened with the San Antonio Four, and that is that a new law passed in Texas in September called SB 344, commonly known as the Junk Science Law, and what that law does is it gives relief to people who have evidence that they were convicted because of junk science, because of evidence that wasn't scientific, that was thought to be at the time, but has been proven to be junk or unscientific. And in the San Antonio Four case, it precisely had to do with medical evidence. The pediatrician in Bexar County who examined the two girls said that they had marks on their genitalia that showed that they'd been abused. She has now said that she would not testify that way today, if she'd known then what she knows now. And the Keller case, the exact same thing has happened. Following an Austin Chronicle report a few years ago, the pediatrician read the article and was stricken, said, I have been to many trainings since then, and I now understand that what I thought was a sign of abuse back then is not. And he has signed an affidavit, and there is a habeas that was submitted. And if the Kellers are freed, and it appears that they will be pending a decision by the Court of Criminal Appeals later on, it will be because of junk science.
But it does seem incredible that, I mean, there is this case that has so many holes in it. You look at it, and today we wonder, how does this happen? And you explain it as there was a mass hysteria in the society at the time. But we have to wait. But are the wheels of justice impossible to correct unless if we didn't have this law that was passed in the last legislature, they would still be in jail right now? I mean, they would continue to be in jail?
There's, good chance of that, absolutely. And my organization, the National Center for Reason and Justice, we are looking at the possibility of trying to pass similar laws in other states. Texas seems to be unique in having passed this law. Yes, I mean, it takes years and years and years to correct these false convictions. We have people on our case list who've been in prison now for 20 years, 25 years, people who get out after 22 years. This is nothing unusual, unfortunately, the amount of time that the Kellers have been locked up.
So about how many other San Antonio 4s or Keller cases are out there, do you think?
Well, that's a good question. We only know right now of one, when you're talking about these very dramatic, bizarre accusations from the past. Now, we certainly know of many, many more people who we think are innocent who've been convicted, let's say, in the last 5 years. And those are what you might think of as sort of garden variety, you know, accusations of incest or child molestation, a man, you know, one child. They get a lot of time, too. It's just as serious when they're innocent. People are horrified by their alleged crimes in the same way that they are by the more bizarre satanic stuff. So it's an ongoing problem, this sort of throwing science and sense and due process out the window when people are accused of hurting children. It just bothers us so much when we think about children being hurt that it's hard to calm down and try to do justice. But as far as the satanic cases, I only know of one who remains besides the Kellers. He's a man in Florida. However, I have to say that NCRJ never heard of the San Antonio Four until 2008, and we only heard it by accident. There was a man in Canada who had taken an interest in it in the Yukon who got a hold of us by email, and my skin crawls when I think about this. If he had not found us on the Internet and not emailed us, they would still be in prison. He said that they had contacted many other groups, including Innocence Projects. Nobody would take the case. These four really wonderful women who I'm convinced are innocent, they would still be in. This is how hard it is to get lawyers and even Innocence Projects to take an interest in people who are falsely accused and convicted of hurting children.
So the prosecutors, investigators, law enforcement, they've got to figure out how to balance the accusation of a child with realizing that, you know, that it's not always true.
Yes, and there is a tremendous amount of psychological research now, you know, that shows that under the right circumstances, even young children can be very credible. But you can't, you can't question them in the wrong ways, and you have to combat a lot of anxiety and hysteria even before they get to the police. Even before they're interviewed forensically, because if the community is in a panic over harm to children, the kids can pick that up and be talking about things that didn't happen even before they see the police. I think I have to say that in Texas, my organization gets a lot of communication from people in Texas claiming that they've been falsely accused and convicted of everything from shaken baby syndrome to child sex abuse. And it's our impression that there's a couple things wrong in Texas. One is you have small-town cops and small-town district attorneys sort of cooperating with each other and perhaps with an angry parent. And you also have a poorly trained child protection workers. That's sort of our impression from what we hear from people contacting us.
So, I mean, how do these cases have actually, have they hurt the cases against those who are actually guilty?
When you do poor investigations, when you question children incorrectly, and when children start saying things that don't make any sense because they've been questioned very poorly, you open up the possibility that a good defense lawyer who really knows his or her stuff can make the child look completely like the child is lying or telling, you know, fantasizing. And although a case might have started off with a real event that the child's reporting, by the time you're done with a bad investigation, you may have nothing left to use against the person who actually committed the crime. And I've seen that happen myself in my research. So it doesn't do children any favors to panic and not do your work correctly as an investigator or a prosecutor.
So far we've been talking about Fran Keller, but what about Dan Keller? How come he's not being talked about as being released?
I think that it's just a matter of timing, that, you know, the first person to be released may be Fran and the second person may be Dan. I think we're really talking about the same phenomenon. I think that they're going to come out as a pair when and if they do, but it's just the timing might be a little bit different.
And
because the writ is the same. I mean, they're really, the legal arguments are the same in both of their cases.
So you bring up a really interesting point about these cases of mass hysteria, about how as a society we get wrapped up in these trends. And at the time in the 90s, it was about these satanic taking over of daycare centers. We had to learn a lesson from that to guard ourselves against future hysterias, right?
Yeah, and somebody today, I was just talking to someone today, and she said, do you think that there'll be another satanic panic? And when might that happen? And my response was, let's not worry about satanic panic. Let's just think about panic and realize that you can be in the middle of one, just as we were in the 80s with the Satanism stuff. You can be in the middle of another one that has nothing to do with Satanism and not even know it. So challenge is to sort of sit here and try to figure out what's going on now. And I would submit that there's a lot of panic at this moment, where a lot of anxieties in the culture get displaced onto the idea that children are horribly endangered. I think that there's a child pornography panic, especially
yeah.
around the internet.
Debbie Nathan,
people...
I got to go, but thank you so much. The National Center for Reason and Justice getting an update on the Keller case. We'll keep an eye out for future developments, expecting something soon. This is The Source on KSTX.